Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dimes Sportsbook and Countermove, your home for fantasy MMA. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 78 event, which takes place in Monterrey, Mexico. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will be breaking down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Briefly looking back at our last event, our premium package bet for UFC 193 went 0-2 to lose 6.29 units overall. We lost our plays on Peter Sabata and the under 2.5 rounds total for the Hall-Whitaker fight. We also lost our one-unit free bet parlay when the Sabata-Noak fight went under 2.5 rounds. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 78 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on Fox Sports 1 and UFC Fight Pass this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Valmir Lazaro, who is 13-3, and Michelle Prezeris, who is 18-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Lazaro -125, Prezeris -115. That was my opening odds, courtesy of our sponsor, FiveDimes.eu. That's what we're going to use for the entire podcast here. And right now, looking over at FiveDimes, Lazaro as the underdog, +105, Prezeris is -125. So basically just flipped with a little bit more early action coming in on the favorite here, or on, I should say on Prezeris, which is now this very slight favorite. So it's virtually a pick'em type of fight. And it is a head scratcher for sure, because if you look, you have basically what you get here is your typical wrestler versus your striker skill set, with Prezeris being your wrestler, grinder, and Lazaro being your striker. And Lazaro is definitely big for the weight class, especially in this matchup. He's going to have a significant reach advantage here. He's just going to be the larger fighter. Prezeris is a little beast though. I mean, he's short, stocky, powerful guy, no doubt about it. And he's going to be looking for those takedowns. Now, Lazaro in his UFC debut against Vic, he looked a little sloppy. He was competitive in that fight, no doubt. I mean, he made it close, but his sloppiness is what bothered me the most. I mean, he just wasn't very technical, and that led to some openings in his defense, and he was getting tagged in his defense as well. But he still showed some signs that he could improve, and he did that against James Krause. He looked much better. That was a big win for him over a very game opponent in James Krause as well. I think that's going to give him confidence. Now, it was a close competitive fight for sure, and he still showed some defensive flaws in that fight, but at least we see some progress in Lazaro's game. And again, with that frame that he's got for the lightweight division, he's a big guy. He's a powerful guy. He can be a very effective striker, no doubt about that. And that's what he's going to look to do against Prezeris here. He's going to look to sprawl and brawl, and he can be effective on the feet. Now, Prezeris, even though he is a grappler, he's got a little bit of power. I mean, he definitely brings it even on the feet. I mean, he basically uses striking to set up his takedowns up against the cage to get you to the floor. Once he's on top, he definitely has a lot of power. He has good ground and pound. He looks for positional control, and he's hard to buck off you and just keep off of you. So he's that typical grinder that you like to see. So you basically, again, have the grappler versus striker skill set. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Prezeris in this spot as well. I think he will be able to get some takedowns here and there. Lazaro, one good thing about him, I think he's able to, even if he gets put on his back, he's able to kind of get out of a bad spot. He's hard to hold down and he gets back up. So if he does a lot of that, then we're going to see a very interesting and close to competitive decision here, I think, either way. So Lazaro's best chance to win this fight clearly is by obviously knocking Prezeris out. I don't think that's going to be an easy task. And I think Prezeris is going to have to kind of grind on him. Even Lazaro getting back up at times, he's going to keep on having to be relentless, be on top of him, pushing a high pace. And I think that's probably what's going to win him the decision in my mind. So I got to lean a little bit more towards Prezeris in this fight, but we have to definitely be cautious about Lazaro, because if he is improving like we've seen thus far, then he could take another big step here and surprise us all. But right now, it's Prezeris for me.
As Nick mentioned, this fight is 100% a striker versus grappler matchup. Lazaro, he's long, and he has significant advantages in terms of height, reach, and leg reach. You got 6 inches in height, six inches in reach, 5 inches in leg reach. So if he's able to use it, he'll be in great shape. But the problem is Lazaro doesn't fight tremendously long. He's more of a brawler. And I think that actually could play right into Prezeris' game. Lazaro really hasn't faced anybody that really tried very hard to take him down either. And I think against Prezeris, he's going to be in some serious trouble if Prezeris is able to get on top of him. Now, Lazaro does work his way back to the feet pretty well, but Prezeris, man, I've been very impressed with his ability to get bites to the ground and keep good opponents on their back. I mean, say what you want about his last fight against Kevin Lee, but the one before that against Mirbek Taisimov, who I think is one of the best young lightweights on the UFC roster, Prezeris had his way with him. And, you know, that's no joke. I mean, Taisimov might have been off his game a little bit on that night, but it doesn't matter. I mean, Prezeris was spectacular there. And I think that if that Prezeris shows up, then he'll have his way with Lazaro as well. And it's not just like all he knows how to do is get fights to the ground. He sets it up by throwing some heavy, heavy shots on the feet. And if Lazaro, you know, is trying to brawl, I think that'll allow Prezeris to throw those big strikes, get up close, and then drag this fight to the ground. The only thing that I'm really concerned about in this fight is the fact that Prezeris does slow down as the fight goes on. So if Lazaro doesn't give up after getting taken down a little bit early in the fight, then if Prezeris starts to gas, especially by the third round, Lazaro could turn it up a notch and try to get a finish. So it'll all come down to that, I think. I really do see Prezeris winning these first two rounds, maybe even getting a submission. But if he, if this fight goes to the third round, then Lazaro could get something going and potentially get a late TKO. But I still think this is a Prezeris' fight to lose. I think he gets top position and grinds this out, and he'll probably tire Lazaro out too, because, it's exhausting being on bottom position as well. So I'm going to side with Michel Prezeris. I think this fight's going to be entertaining, but I think, it's going to the grappler here. Now, sticking with the lightweight division and kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have Cesar Arzamendia, who is 7-2, taking on Polo Reyes, who is 5-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA Oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Arzamendia -210 to come back on Reyes, +160. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it's Arzamendia -190. The comeback is +165. So line margins tighten up a little bit. I don't think there's a lot of people coming in on this fight. For one, I'm sure most people haven't really did the research and footage on this fight yet. And a lot of people probably don't care about it that much either. But it should be a pretty close fight, pretty entertaining fight, because you got two guys that overall really prefer to stand and bang. And I think that's what we're going to get in this fight, because they both have decent takedown defense, and they both, again, like to utilize their stand-up game. I'm going to start off with Arzamendia first, since he's the favorite in this fight. He's a talented fighter. He's got skill in all areas with solid technique overall. Decent fight IQ shows as well. And he's the type of fighter that does prefer to stand and strike, but he does work well on the ground as well. So regardless of where the fight takes place, Arzamendia is definitely game. On the show, he was a semifinalist. He won his first fight by TKO, but really wasn't challenged from the Panamanian kid that he actually fought. So I think you almost have to throw that out the window. I mean, he was just a level way above the person he fought there. And then the second fight, he was actually doing really good against the guy that's in the championship right now, actually, Barzola, a finalist. He was dominating Barzola, had him hurt early on, and then he actually got caught with a big punch. And from that punch, it really changed the complexion of the fight. Barzola was able to take Arzamendia down on the ground. He was able to physically dominate him, and then eventually Arzamendia actually tapped to a punch that hit him in the stomach. So that kind of is a head scratcher in a way, because Arzamendia did tend to fade a little bit, and I think a lot of that was Barzola's punch that rocked him and hurt him a little bit worse than probably we all realized. So that is a concern for sure, because Reyes definitely hits hard. He's another guy that likes to stand and bang. He has a complete skill set as well. I don't think he's as technical as Arzamendia is in this spot, but he's another guy that he's more of a striking-based fighter, in my opinion. And his offensive attack isn't really that bad. He's got some clean punches, nice timing with his kicks, and good counter strikes. And that's kind of what he likes to do. He likes to sit back and kind of let the opponent push the pace, and then looks to kind of pick him apart and counter. But he does push the pace back from time to time as well. On the show, the first fight, he won by TKO in the second round. In the second fight, he actually got KO'd by Gutierrez, who is a finalist, so you got to cut him a little bit of slack there as well. But the problem with Reyes, to me, is his cardio and that backpedaling. Like I said, he likes to kind of counter-strike, and that tends to get him hit a little bit. He was even dropped in the first fight that he won, but he ended up coming back. It was a slugfest. It was a pretty fun fight to watch. But he ended up coming back and winning that fight. So you got to give him credit for that. Now, as far as Reyes go on the ground, he is capable of taking the fight to the ground. And what does impress me with Reyes is once he gets top position on the ground, he starts dropping some nasty elbows. So he utilizes his ground pound very well, and he can be effective with it. So it wouldn't be a bad idea for him to try to get Arzamendia down on the floor, try to have some success that way. But overall, I still think Arzamendia has a little bit more upside, and he's a little bit more skilled and technical. Now, at the line, it is, I think still, I opened it a little bit higher because I think the public will probably favor Arzamendia a little bit more. But I think it is going to be a competitive fight. And honestly, I don't trust either one of these guys all that much. So I do lean Arzamendia's way, but he has to show me something here. And this is a winnable fight, and I think he probably does win this fight.
I expect this fight to be a competitive bout between two decent strikers. The biggest difference between these guys, honestly, is the fact that Arzamendia is 24 and Reyes is 31. Reyes is from Mexico. Watching him fight, he has good leg kicks, decent punching combinations. The big issue with him, though, is he's a bit stiff, he's hittable on the feet, but when he does get hit and hurt, you know, he has some good heart, he fights through it, and he has some power. So Reyes is a pretty good overall striker. Now Arzamendi, on the other hand, he's from Paraguay, and he has good length. I think he has a great lead left hand. When he has his opponents hurt, he swarms well, but he does get pretty sloppy in that department, so if he hurts Reyes, he needs to be careful, because with the way that he kind of wings punches, you know, all over the place when he has somebody hurt, with the way that Reyes kind of bites down in his mouthpiece when he gets hurt, he could get himself in some trouble. Also, Arzamendia, as evidenced by his semifinal fight, he's not very good when he's put on his back. So that is a concern. If Reyes, who has some decent ground and pound, gets on top of him, I think Arzamendia could get in some trouble. And Arzamendia does not have as much heart as Reyes. So, I mean, if these guys are landing punch for punch, then Arzamendia could get himself in trouble. That being said, I do think that Arzamendia, being younger, being quicker, he's definitely the more relaxed striker of the two. I think that over the course of the fight, I expect Arzamendia to get the better of Reyes. And I think that he ends up eventually picking up a TKO at some point. But this fight should be a fun scrap while it lasts. But my pick is Arzamendia. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have another battle between Ultimate Fighter Latin America Season 2 contestants between Vernon Ramos, who is 3-0, and Alvaro Herrera, who is 8-3. Now Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Ramos minus 180. Five, the comeback on Herrera plus 145. And right now, looking over five dimes, it is Ramos minus 165. Comeback still the same at plus 145. So line margins again tighten up a little bit. Not a ton of early action coming in on this fight either. I think it's the same scenario as the last fight that we were just talking about. A lot of people aren't going to be running to the windows to try to bet this fight or you know, logging in online saying, oh, I got to bet Ramos versus Herrera here. It's probably not going to get a ton of action. And for a good reason. I mean, honestly, if you look at these guys, I guess I'll start off with Ramos again. He's favored first. He's not a bad fighter. I mean, he's aggressive. He's got one of these styles that's aggressively wild everywhere. I mean, on the feet, on the ground, he's got a complete game, but he's still a little raw and he makes a lot of mistakes. But his aggression and the way he goes about things, I mean, it makes for kind of a fun, entertaining fight, in most cases, because he does the effectiveness or, you know, his aggressiveness does lead for him to get, tagged and even make some mistakes on the ground as well. But you can see glimpses of skill, no doubt about it. And he's going to be a tough matchup for Herrera here because I think Ramos is one of those guys that kind of has no quit in him. He definitely tries to push the pace and he has the ability to make life rough for a guy like Herrera, especially considering Herrera is one of these guys that he actually lost in the elimination round. So he's getting a break. Usually they bring in the semifinalists in the show. This time around, they brought back Herrera, which didn't look good at all, honestly. I mean, he's a pretty big guy. He's going to have a size advantage over Ramos here in this spot as well. But even if you look back at Herrera, his pre-fight record before he came to the UFC, he has zero quality wins. He fought all weak competition. Those were his W's. So even though Ramos has less fights, Herrera still hasn't really impressed me that much. And then his performance on the show as well wasn't that good. I mean, he actually was doing okay. He started off well in the fight. He's again has some power. He likes to push a little bit of pace. He's big and strong, especially for the welterweight division. But then he started slowing up a little bit. His cardio is terrible. His strike defense is definitely a problem for him as well. He does look for some takedowns and control and uses his power really over technique on the feet and on the ground. And that's kind of not what you want to see, but he does have a little bit of decent clinch game. He works his knees well and he throws those big looping punches that can be effective, but a little bit sloppy at times again. So this is going to be kind of a slop fest here with both fighters being raw. I just think that Ramos has a little bit more heart and more of the desire to win this fight. So as the fight goes on, even if Ramos is in trouble early on, which I think that's probably going to be the case. I think honestly how this fight's going to play out is Herrera is going to come in early on. He's going to overwhelm Ramos in the first couple minutes, but then Ramos is going to kind of hang in there. Even if he gets rocked a little bit, he's going to hang in there and basically flip a switch, and he's going to end up being on top, getting top position if the fight stays on the ground, or being the more effective striker on the feet as well. Ramos has a little bit of submission, sneaky submission skill on the ground as well. Wouldn't be surprised if he ends this fight by sub, but in round two, round three, the longer this fight goes, it does favor Ramos, and I think Herrera is going to blow it. I mean, it's just, I'm not really that impressed. He does have the physical size to do well in this fight. I don't think he has the cardio, the skill to just continuously do good in all three rounds. So I think he's going to eventually find a spot where he wants out, and Ramos is probably going to give it to him. So I am going to lean Ramos in this fight. I do think he wins, and I do see a little bit more upside for Ramos as well.
This is another battle between nations, as Ramos is from Panama and Herrera is from Mexico. And honestly, looking at how these guys performed on the show, I'm shocked that Herrera was given another shot to fight in the UFC. I mean, he looked atrocious in his fight in the quarterfinals. Didn't get anything going, you know, kind of had some gimme takedown attempts and then gave up and just started getting beat down. I mean, it was really ugly. I mean, he did not look good. I'm flabbergasted that the UFC decided to give this guy another shot. Maybe they just really liked Ramos and they want to give him a chance to pick up a win. I'm not sure. But that's honestly the way I'm looking at this, because Herrera, he is slow. Yeah, he's the bigger fighter here, but he does not use his length well. He does not strike very well. He does not have good conditioning, as Nick mentioned. He does have a little bit of power, and that's the only thing I think that's going to be concerning Ramos, because Ramos is, you know, his chin is questionable. He got dropped in both of his fights on the show, although in the first one he came back with a fury and ended up winning the last two rounds. And then the second time he actually got dropped right away against Montano, the eventual finalist. We'll get to him later. And he came back and was winning the next couple minutes of that fight. So the guy has a ton of heart. And the big difference also is size. I mean, Ramos is definitely a lot more stocky compared to Herrera. He's very aggressive. He mixes up his punches and kicks well. Pushes a really high pace. Throws everything with bad intentions, even though he doesn't have the most power. And I really do appreciate this guy's heart and the pace that he can push, and the fact that I think he can keep that going for the full three rounds. His conditioning is on point. So if Herrera can't put Ramos away quickly, then I see Ramos just completely steamrolling him. I do not see this fight going the full three rounds. I think at some point Ramos will get a finish if Herrera, you know, can't do something early, because Herrera just, he was so bad on the show that either he was injured or something, I don't know. But Ramos should be able to just completely steamroll him if he can survive early. So my pick is going to be Vernon Ramos. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Gabriel Benitez, who is 18-4, taking on Andre Feely, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I open Feely -210, the comeback, and Benitez +160. And right now, looking over at five dimes, it is Feely -190, +165 for Benitez. So again, line margins tightened up a little bit. The line did get bet up originally, and then it came back down. Some dog action coming in on Benitez as well. So there is some two-way action on this fight. There is some split opinions out there on this fight as well. I'm not really that surprised with the split opinions, because, I mean, if you look at Benitez in his last fight, I mean, he surprised me as well. I know Benitez, honestly, out of the Latin America tough fighters thus far that have come out, I think Benitez has some of the best potential, honestly, because he's got a really well put together game. He's got good fight IQ. He's got that experience. He's been in the sport for a long time. So he's not bad. I was honestly impressed with his skill set, but his step up, I think, I mean, his improvement from the show to that Clay Collard fight, I mean, in the stand-up game, which Benitez always had pretty good stand-up, but even on a different level overall, I think it's really impressive. And training at AKA, which Benitez is now doing, has really paid dividends for him. So I think we're going to see continued improvement for Benitez, and it's going to be a tough fight for Feely here. That's why you're seeing a competitive line. I mean, in most cases, Feely's one of these guys that has kind of the public support in most cases behind him, is obviously training with a good camp and Team Alpha Male. And I mean, so he's got a lot of good things going for him. And then his ability in the cage thus far has been pretty impressive as well. I know he had a tough defeat there to Max Holloway early on, but he was game in that fight until he started gassing a little bit. Holloway started taking control of that. He has a really good win over Arantes, and that fight was a back and forth battle as well, but his wrestling is improving constantly, and he showed that in that fight as well. And then he got caught basically in his last fight by that triangle choke from Pepe. But besides that, Feely is definitely improving in all aspects of the game as well, because he has the talent on the feet to knock you out. He could be very effective in the striking game. But I think more than anything else right now, he's fighting a little bit smarter. He's looking to take the fight to the ground. He's looking to outpoint you and do some damage on the ground as well. So he can win the fight in all areas. And that, I think, is going to what he's going to have to do against Benitez. He's going to have to look to take this fight to the floor, because if it stays standing, I honestly give the stand-up edge, the more technical edge, to Benitez. Both these guys have some power, but I do like Benitez on the feet. I think his improvement, his ability to be a little bit more effective and land the cleaner shots and the harder shots on the feet are going to pay dividends, especially as the fight goes on. Feely does tend to gas a little bit, does tend to slow down. And if that's the case with the fighter against Benitez, he's going to pay for it in the later rounds. So I do give the slight edge on the feet to Benitez. It's going to come down to whether he can stuff the Feely takedowns, or if he does get taken down, which I'm sure he will throughout the fight, is how quickly he can bounce back up. And then on the feet, once he is up, just kind of weather the storm a little bit against Feely and then just be able to pick him apart. So this fight is going to be ultra competitive. I think it's going to be one of the best fights on this card from top to bottom. I'm glad they matched him up this way. And I think Benitez can surprise people with his ability to improve. And this matchup for him is a winnable fight as well. So I'm going to go against the grain here, and I'm going to pick the dog. I'm going to go with Benitez. I think that he's going to be able to sprawl and brawl well enough, and he's going to probably be able to win the stand-up battle here. I could see a late finish from Benitez, or I could see him win a very close competitive decision on the cards as well. So either way, I'm going to pick Benitez to beat Feely in this fight.
Yeah, I think nobody out of tough Latin America has improved more than Gabriel Benitez, except maybe Yair Rodriguez. This guy came out of nowhere almost. I mean, he was a decent fighter on the show, but he has gone on and looked spectacular. I mean, his last performance against Clay Collard, I was floored with how much he improved. And this is definitely a tough matchup. Andre Feely's a guy out of Team Alpha Male. I mean, he's an excellent fighter, excellent training environment, and he's going to have some advantages here. I mean, Feely is going to have the edge in reach and height by about 3 inches. But that being said, I think Benitez is the better striker. Benitez has excellent boxing. He kicks pretty well. And Feely, he's just a little bit sloppier in terms of his pure stand-up skills. I know he looked really good in his UFC debut, but he wasn't facing a good striker. And I think against Benitez, I think he is going to get touched up a little bit. Now, where Feely will have the edge, as Nick mentioned, is the fact that he does push the pace in terms of getting the fight to the canvas. And Feely will have a wrestling edge here. It's just a matter of, will he be able to utilize that wrestling for all three rounds? Also, will he be able to keep Benitez down if he gets a takedown? And I don't know if he will. The other thing is, I'm not sure Feely will be able to keep a high pace for three straight rounds. His conditioning is a little bit suspect. So basically what you have here is a fighter in Benitez who is the superior stand-up striker, taking on somebody that is probably going to stand with him until he realizes that he's getting touched up, and then somebody that's going to be looking to get the fight to the canvas. And it's just a matter of whether or not Benitez can, first of all, avoid getting taken down, and then second, get back up if he does get taken down. Because if he can, then I think he wins this fight easily. If not, then Feely could grind out a decision and make it ugly. So I think this fight is going to be competitive. I think Gabriel Benitez will probably walk away with the decision victory. I don't see Andre Feely being able to utilize that wrestling for extended periods of time. It's just, I think he's going to have his hands full here, and I think Gabriel Benitez is primed for an upset. So my pick is Gabriel Benitez as well. Now dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Scott Jorgensen, who is 15-11, taking on Alejandro Perez, who is 16-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, And how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Jorgensen -175, the comeback on Perez +135, and right now looking over the line at five dimes, it's Jorgensen -145, the comeback on Perez is +125. And it's interesting because the original action did come in on Jorgensen and it caused the line to bump up over 2-1 at one point, I believe. Now it's come back down a little bit. Line margins have tightened up. There's more sports books have followed and copied and posted their line as well. So now you're seeing basically across the board around $1.45, $1.50 for Jorgensen here in this fight. This is a fight that most people are going to probably be on the same page about. I mean, Jorgensen, if you're looking back at his career recently, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's earned a title shot in the UFC, regardless of the weight class, regardless of the situation. The guy was definitely one of the best and most talented fights at 135. 125 didn't fare as well for him as he liked, but still, I mean, the guy has been well-respected and just a tremendous fighter throughout his UFC career. Now, unfortunately for him, he's lost what I believe it's 5 out of his last 6 fights. So that's not really a good sign for Jorgensen. He is hitting that spot where he is starting to decline. But if you look at his skill set, I mean, the guy has wrestling, the guy has striking, the guy has submission skill, the guy has it all. It's just his body won't react as well as it did at one point, and he's losing some of these fights. He's not looking like he used to. So he's facing basically a young, fresh, hungry opponent in Perez, which is improving all the time. Another guy, like we just mentioned about Benitez, that is training at AKA and is really stepping up his game quite a bit. Now, a lot of people are going to question what I just said, because if they look back at his last fight, I mean, he just got destroyed by Williams. I mean, he just got overwhelmed. I mean, the fight lasted, what, 20 seconds or so. So I think you can basically throw that out the window. I mean, you got to credit Williams for getting the win that fast, but we can definitely expect better from Perez than that performance. So throw that one out the window, and you can look at his improvement. I mean, and the Ultimate Fighter, the fight that he had at UFC 180 against Quinones, he showed a lot of improvement. I thought Quinones was going to beat him again, honestly, and he just showed that he is, out of the two, he was making the better progress. He was pushing harder at training, and he was obviously doing all the right things because his ability on the feet were better, his takedown defense was better, his awareness on the ground. Everything about Perez's game is definitely improving. The problem with me here is in this fight, I think Perez can be a little bit more effective. He's got some speed and he's got some power in the feet, and Jorgensen's chin has definitely been shaky, but I still think Jorgensen is the better fighter in almost every area. So even despite his age and despite him looking bad, I still think Jorgensen is going to be the better wrestler. I still think on the feet it's going to be close. I do think that Perez is going to outstrike Jorgensen because I think, again, he has a little bit more speed, a little bit more power at this stage, and I trust his chin a little bit more as well. But I still think that's going to be competitive as well. And I think Jorgensen has that experience against the high-level competitors that he's going to be a step ahead of Perez. He's going to be pushing the pace, maybe even clinching up if he has to, and getting some takedowns, some timely takedowns when he does as well. So I think this is honestly a toss-up type of fight for me, but I'm going to lean towards a veteran in Jorgensen. I think that most people are probably going to lean the other way, but honestly, until Perez proves that he can get by a guy that's just a little bit more well-rounded than him, honestly, and a little bit ahead of him still at this point, then I'll believe that Perez is kind of taking that right step forward. So I'm still going to go with Jorgensen. I just think he's going to be a little bit too much, and he can win a decision over Perez if he doesn't get finished. So that's the call for me. If Jorgensen doesn't get finished by KO, he probably wins a fight. So I got to lean a little bit more towards Jorgensen in this one.
Scott Jorgensen has definitely been put through the ringer in his career. I mean, you just go back. I mean, the guy has lost 5 of his last 6 fights and then 7 of his last 9 fights. And for the most part, they've been against some pretty tough opposition. I mean, you go back, Hayden Barrow, Eddie Wineland, Uriah Faber, Zach Mikofsky, Jussier Formiga, and then Wilson Hayes. You know, they're all good fighters. And even the last one, Manny Gamburian. The problem is he really hasn't been able to beat any of the good fighters he's faced. He's just a guy that's been around the block. And the biggest issue with Jorgensen is, I think, his chin has really started to deteriorate. I mean, he's a guy that used to be known as a guy that could go out there and slug it out with the best of them. And he picked up some impressive wins back in the day. You know, he beat Mitsugaki, he beat Brad Pickett. You know, he earned that title shot against Dominic Cruz in the bantamweight division. But, you know, ever since, I mean, he has just really been on a steep decline. And I think that, you know, he's clearly on his way out right now. And I don't think that there's really anything he can do that's going to turn it around for him. I was honestly surprised that he was able to avoid that latest round of UFC cuts. Now, Alejandro Perez, he's a good fighter, but in his last fight, I mean, he got completely overwhelmed by the moment fighting in Mexico, and then Patrick Williams just blasted him and then put him away with a guillotine choke, the fastest finish in UFC bantamweight history. And I think that's really not the type of situation that he's going to be in there against Scott Jorgensen this time around. Jorgensen has some power, and he has some submission ability. I mean, he's picked up some pretty impressive guillotines in his day, but he's not the type of guy that's just going to swarm you like that, and he's not that explosive. Jorgensen does have some good wrestling, but I don't know. I think Perez should be able to hold his own. I mean, this is a guy that's doing some serious training at an American Kickboxing Academy. He's working with a fellow, you know, tough Latin America fighter, Benitez, Gabriel Benitez. So I'm expecting him to come out here fully prepared. He's not going to have the deer in the headlights like he did in his last fight. And I think that he's going to be able to take advantage of a faded, near the end of his UFC career, Scott Jorgensen. And honestly, this is more of a fade of Scott Jorgensen at this point than it is, you know, a pick of Perez. But I'm going to lean with Alejandro Perez here. I think that he gets back on track and picks up the win, probably by decision or maybe a late knockout. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Hector Urbina, who is 17-8, taking on Bartosz Fabinski, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Fabinski -230, the comeback, and Urbina +170. Looking over at the line right now at Five Dimes, it's -190 for Fabinski, and the comeback, and Urbina is +165. So line margins tightened up a little bit. There has been a little bit more action coming in on the underdog, some parlay action coming in on Fabinski as well. So it's kind of balanced out a little bit, and I think we will see some separate opinions on this fight because – you know, Fabinski actually had a really good showing in his last fight. He took it on short notice, went up a weight class, and was able to basically grind out McClellan. He looked pretty good in that fight. So that was impressive to see, no doubt about it. Now he's going back down to his weight class at 170, but he's facing a very game and underrated opponent in Urbina. Urbina is one of these guys that's been around for such a long time. You're talking about a veteran of the sport. I mean, he's faced a lot of big name opponents throughout his career, and he's done okay. I mean, he hasn't really pulled off a lot of tremendous victories over those name opponents, but he's been competitive against most as well. But then looking at his progress and his improvement, I mean, over that win over Edgar Garcia in his last fight was impressive. I mean, Garcia's no easy out, and that was a beautiful guillotine choke that he ended up catching there. And that's the kind of fighter Urbina is. You cannot take him lightly because he's going to be in the fight. I mean, he has decent wrestling overall. He can be effective with the striking technique. He's got some power. He's got the will to win. He's got some heart. He's got a little bit of everything. He's training with American Top Team, which has actually helped his game progress quite a bit. So Urbina's no easy out. But unfortunately for him, I do think that Fabinski is just going to be a little bit better everywhere. Even though Urbina has the experience, I think he's got more of the complete overall game. Like, he's more dangerous in all areas. I still think that he's not going to be quite dangerous enough to catch Fabinski in anything. And if he doesn't do that, Fabinski is going to probably grind him out. I think Fabinski can get the fight to the ground, drop some ground and pound, look for submissions, control most of the fight. Even on the feet, I think Fabinski is actually going to be effective enough to possibly even hurt Urbina. I mean, Urbina has been knocked out throughout his career. I believe he's been knocked out 5 times. I mean, his chin is probably a little bit better than that indicates, but still, I mean, there is definitely a problem against power and that chin. So I think Fabinski could possibly rock him, which will obviously help steal around, if not knock him out completely. And then again, he's more of the grinder style that he's going to push a high pace, and he's going to give really a problem everywhere for Urbina. So I do lean Fabinski. I think he is the better fighter, especially how they match up here as far as his game plan goes. He's going to be able to outgrind Urbina. But Urbina is going to be game, definitely. And I do have a lot of respect for fighters that improve, especially these savvy vets. Urbina, much respect, but I think he's just going to get beat here straight up by Fabinski.
Fabinski and Urbina, they're both primarily grapplers, although Urbina is a bit scrappy on the feet. Urbina does have the better overall track record in terms of opposition that he's faced, but he really hasn't picked up a lot of quality wins throughout his career. Honestly, the best win that Hector Urbina's ever had was in his UFC debut against Edgar Garcia last year. So I think that he'll have his hands full here with Fabinski. Fabinski, based out of Poland, just a tenacious wrestler and top control guy. You saw that in his UFC debut on short notice, moving up a weight class, taking on Gareth McClellan, who ended up getting a win in his last fight. And Fabinski was just completely dominant. Got takedown after takedown, stayed on top of McClellan. He had no answer for it. And Fabinski ended up winning a very one-sided decision. Now, Hector Urbina, he's a guy, you know, he's dangerous. And I expect that he's going to really push a high pace early and try to catch Fabinski in something or clip Fabinski on the feet, because Fabinski isn't a great striker. So maybe Urbina will have an opening there. But if Fabinski gets this fight to the ground, then I see him just obliterating Urbina. Because Fabinski, as an undersized middleweight, was able to completely physically dominate his opponent in his last fight. And this time he's dropping down to welterweight where he belongs. And he's actually going to be the bigger, stronger guy. He's going to have some reach in all areas and an inch in height. And I think he's going to be so much physically stronger. I think he's going to push Urbina around a little bit. And he's going to make him carry his weight the second he gets this fight to the ground or in the clinch. And I think he's just going to be exhausting for Urbina. It's going to be a really long fight for him. And if Fabinski does not pick up a TKO via ground and pound at some point, then he, at least in my opinion, is going to win a one-sided decision. Because, you know, Urbina, you know, as good and young as he is, I think that this is a very bad matchup for him. And unless he clips Fabinski coming in, then he's probably on his way to picking up that first UFC defeat. So my pick is going to be Bartosz Fabinski. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a bantamweight matchup between Eric Perez, who is 14-6, and Taylor Lapolis, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Eppen Perez minus 180, the comeback on Lapolis plus 140. Right now, looking over the line, it's actually moving on the Don Best screen as we speak. It just dropped to minus 115 for Perez. The comeback on Lapolis is minus 105 now. So much for hype. I mean, Eric Perez had so much going for him early on in his UFC career. Impressive wins, impressive performances. I mean, a lot of people thought Perez would be something special in the UFC and eventually make a title run. I mean, training at obviously a great camp, one of the best camps out there in Greg Jackson's. A lot of good things going for Perez. I mean, obviously he's going to be very popular in Mexico as well. You know, so he's even actually on the commentating team in the, you know, Latin America world or whatever too for the UFC. He covers the sport well. So he's got some popularity. He's got some skill when it comes to actually fighting in the cage as well. And I mean, he is improving. In fact, I think Perez is actually such a well-rounded fighter. It's a shame that he's not a little bit better than he is in his inconsistency, especially recently. I mean, he's been out since 2014, his loss to Caraway, which, I mean, I think his fight IQ does have to come into play in that fight as well. He was doing okay and then got put on a bad spot. I mean, just he could have kept the fight upright, in my opinion, a little bit more and had more success. But he went to the ground with Caraway. Caraway ended up getting his back and choking him out. That is not a smart thing. But Perez typically will have the better wrestling in most cases. Perez typically has the better striking. So he's got that complete game and he can be effective in every area. But he's just been a little bit of a letdown. So much, like I said, for that buzz, that hype, because now it's kind of switched over to Lapolis. I mean, the people are coming in and betting him as well. A little bit surprising. I still thought that people would, you know, have that hype or have that like for Perez's skill set and, you know, with the time off. Oh, he's back. You know, a lot of people are looking forward to it. Obviously, that's not the case at all. More people are looking forward to see how Lapolis performs because his win over Sasaki in his last fight was wow. I mean, the improvement level that you've seen from Lapolis, looking at his early fights and his early career. Now, of course, they weren't even under real MMA rules in some of those fights or most of his fights throughout his career. So when he made his official UFC debut against Rocky Lee, that was when he had his first taste of real MMA action, real UFC action, real even the competition level. Everything has really improved since he's been in the UFC, and he stepped it up. I mean, we've seen a good performance against Rocky Lee, somebody that was consistently trying to get the fight to the floor. He was able to sprawl and brawl, so his takedown defense is getting better. Lapolis has always had a pretty decent sub game, so he has that area kind of covered, and he's going to continue to improve as well. And then against Sasaki, it's a stand-up game that was really something else, a thing of beauty really to watch. He is a southpaw. He has long reach for being kind of a shorter fighter as well. So that's a little bit tricky to match up with at times as well. So if we see this fight playing out on the feet, I'm expecting a really competitive, fun fight, a war really. So if the fight hits the ground, I think it's going to be honestly Perez looking to take Lapolis down and control the fight because on the feet he might not like what he's getting a taste of. So I'm expecting really right now where the line is a pick-em type of fight. is pretty accurate, because I do think it'll go back and forth. I think that this is by far the toughest test in Lapalisse's career. And at the same time, it's going to be a tough bounce back fight for Perez to come back and show, look, I'm back. You can throw me right back in the mix, because he's facing a guy that's just improving. He's a little bit younger. Both these guys are young, obviously, but Lapalisse a couple years younger, and his improvement levels, I think, even better than what we're used to seeing at this stage. So, tough one. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Lapalisse in this spot, mainly because of the time off that Perez has been away from the octagon for so long. I'm just not sure. He's going to have a little bit of ring rust. I'm leaning towards Lapalisse.
There has been no one in the UFC, I think, that has surprised me with their performance in the octagon compared to how they fought outside of it as much as Taylor Lapalisse. I think this guy, I mean, I picked him to lose to a Chinese fighter in his UFC debut, and he has completely surprised me. I've been very, very impressed with how he's not just performed, but improved, because his first two UFC fights, he faced guys that wanted to take the fight to the ground in Rocky Lee and Oka Sasaki, and he was able to avoid those situations and then hurt his opponents on the feet. And that is very, very impressive, because he was coming from a situation in France where they weren't even allowing much ground fighting or ground and pound. So he wasn't really in those type of situations. I thought that he'd get taken down, he'd eat some shots on the ground, he'd panic, and I thought that he'd give up an easy submission. And that just wasn't the case. This kid's really good, and he's getting better and better every time we see him. And Eric Perez, on the other hand, he's a guy that exploded onto the scene in the UFC bantamweight division, but then went right back down to earth in a bad way every time since he fought Takeya Mitsugaki and Brian Caraway. You know, those were, you know, two legit bantamweights, and he just was not quite on their level. So I think this time against Taylor Lapalisse, this is a guy that's a good up-and-coming prospect. This is going to be a tough test for Perez. Yeah, Perez trains at a great gym, some of the best coaching in the world with Jackson Winklejohn. But the big issue here is, you know, he's definitely made some tough and, you know, just quirky mental errors in fights. And I think that's something that Lapalisse can take advantage of. I think Lapalisse is the better striker of the two. So even though Perez has some power, Lapalisse should be able to get things going on the feet. He's going to have a significant reach advantage, 6 inches, believe it or not, even though Perez is the taller guy. And Lapalisse is just the fresher guy. If you go back, I mean, Eric Perez hasn't fought since June of 2014. So this will be very interesting to see how he performs, because I think he was originally supposed to skip to fight about a year ago, but then he had to pull out due to a shoulder injury. So he's just been sidelined, rehabbing and recovering. And this is finally his first fight back. So, you know, 17, 18 months, that's rough. That's a long, long layoff. And I think that this is a very tough opponent that he's going to be facing. I was expecting that he'd be fighting, you know, somebody coming off of a loss, and he was originally scheduled to, but Lapalisse stepped in on short notice for Stasiak. So I think, you know, Perez definitely has his hands full here. And even though it is a relatively short notice performance for Lapalisse, you know, he's had well over a month to prepare, and he's had a decent amount of time between fights, so he's not coming in all battle worn. So I expect Taylor Lapalisse to show up well prepared. And the big thing here that Eric Perez needs to do most likely is to get the fight to the ground, because he does have a superior submission game compared to Lapalisse, and he should have the better wrestling. But it's just all about whether or not he can get the takedowns, because Lapalisse so far has faced two grapplers, and he was able to avoid the ground against them. Now, Perez is a better wrestler, in my opinion, than the two guys that Lapalisse has fought so far. And his ground game is just as good, if not better, than Sasaki. So if Lapalisse gets taken down, he could be in some trouble. But if he's able to keep this fight at distance, if he's able to just start peppering away at Perez, we could definitely be primed for an upset. So I'm picking Taylor Lapalisse as well. Now, kicking off the main card, we have a lightweight contest between Efrain Escudero, who is 25-9, and Leandro Silva, who is 18-2-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Silva -140, the comeback, and Escudero even money, and right now looking for Five Dimes, it's still -140, but the comeback now on Escudero is +120. So line staying fairly steady And it is that type of fight, honestly. I think it's a pick-em type of fight with a slight lean towards Silva. I'm expecting a very competitive fight. I mean, in the past, honestly, Escudero hasn't gotten that really that much respect, I think, from the overall community, from the bettors out there either. But he does have a pretty well put together game. I mean, he has some wrestling. He's got some striking skill. Escudero is just one of those guys that doesn't really overwhelm you, but his cardio and conditioning is decent. Everything about him. I mean, he's been putting the work in. He's, I think, finally found his groove, and he's definitely a tough out. But this matchup against Silva, it's going to be tough for him because if you look back, I mean, Escudero, even though he has decent wrestling, he still has been put on his back and he's been controlled in fights. And obviously, Silva, that's what he likes to do. A lot of people could think of Silva as more of a lot of – yeah, I've heard this before too. I think a lot of people consider Silva more of a striking-based fighter as well. But at the same time, he does utilize the ground game well because he's one of those guys that has a little bit of everything. So he might be known for his grappling, but then he shows a little bit of striking and vice versa. So I think the best part of Silva's game is his grappling. On the feet, I think Silva does have an edge because I think he has a little bit more power. I think he has a little bit cleaner technique, but the problem is Silva is just not consistently busy. He does get tentative at times, and that tentativeness has cost him in the past. And if he is tentative against a guy like Escudero on the feet, Escudero is going to be coming forward. Even though he doesn't have a whole lot of power in his punches, he's still going to be landing, and he could be stealing some rounds, especially if it stays upright on the feet. But I think Silva is going to look to clinch up. He's going to look to pin Escudero up against the fence. I think this fight does end up on the ground a little bit, and I think Silva gets the better of the grappling exchanges on the ground as well. So that's why I'm leaning a little bit more towards Silva. I think he can be effective when he does strike. He could be a little bit more effective, and I think he can be a little bit more effective on the ground. And I think he will control the ground a little bit more than Escudero. So I expect this fight to go every which way, meaning that we'll see a back-and-forth action on the feet. I mean, we'll see Escudero winning at times. We'll see Silva taking back over. Same thing on the ground. I expect this to just be a complete MMA fight and a very competitive MMA fight. But I honestly have to lean a little bit more towards Silva. I think that, again, he'll just control a little bit more of the fight, especially in the clinch game, in the exchanges, up against the cage and on the ground. I think he's just going to be able to do enough to just barely skim by in this fight. So that's why I got to lean his way. It is in Mexico, though, again. So the hometown crowd is definitely going to be on Escudero's side. That could sway the judges. But if this was honestly on a neutral kind of court type of thing, I think that Silva does win this fight more times than not. So I still have to go with him here, even though it is in Mexico. So my official pick is Leandro Silva to win.
I expect this fight to be very competitive. Efrain Escudero probably isn't quite as technical as Leandro Silva on the feet, but he is much more active, and I think that that's going to be to his benefit. So I expect him to push a decent pace in the stand-up, and even though Leandro Silva is the better kicker and probably a little bit better of an overall striker, if Escudero is just able to stay in his grill on the feet, I think that he'll actually win most of those exchanges, especially in the judges' eyes. Now, in terms of the ground game, I think this will be a competitive battle on the ground. Silva is probably the better submission threat on the canvas, but I think that Escudero is the better wrestler. And Escudero is dangerous. He can threaten with submissions well. And I mean, if you look at how these guys have performed recently, yeah, Silva's is unbeaten in his last three fights, but Escudero, these guys do have an opponent in common. And Leandro Silva was having a bit of trouble with Drew Dober. I mean, Drew Dober, I thought, won that first round against him. He was, doing well in the second, and then, Leandro Silva caught him in that submission, did not tap, and then the ref stopped it. I mean, that's why it's a no contest now. It ended up getting overturned. But when Efrain Escudero fought Drew Dober, just completely smoked him. Just immediate submission, took him out. So that's the one fighter they have in common, and I thought Escudero looked great against Dober. And I think that he can look great here. I expect Escudero to be aggressive, and as long as he's not super sloppy, then he should be in a good position. I mean, Escudero has been put in bad positions before. He's been out-grappled before by, really good Brazilian jiu-jitsu artists and decent wrestlers. So that is something you have to be concerned about. But I think Escudero is going to be really fired up, and I think that he'll take advantage of some of Leandro Silva's timidity at times. And I expect him to either win a decision or, maybe he can, get fired up enough that he could lock something in and force Silva to tap out. But more often than not, I see Escudero pulling off a decision victory. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have Horacio Gutierrez, who is 3-1, taking on Enrique Barzola, who is 11-2-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight And how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Gutierrez -140, the comeback on Barzola, even money. Right now, looking over at the five dimes, it is currently for Gutierrez -150. The comeback on Barzola is +130. So a little bit of back and forth action coming in here. Slightly more on Gutierrez. These guys are obviously the tough Latin America 2 lightweight finalists. Both of these guys are actually skilled, and I'm looking forward to watching these guys fight. So I am impressed from their performances on the show. Starting off with Gutierrez first. He's a pretty complete fighter. I'd like to watch him stand and utilize his striking skill on the feet. He's got good boxing, good kickboxing. He moves well. He's got a combination of both speed and power, aggressive and confident, on the feet as well. And he likes to stand and bang. So that's one thing he's got going for him. He is an exciting fighter. He shows some decent takedown defense and ground awareness as well. And if you do get him to the ground, he's one of these guys that he knows I better get back up off, you know, off my back so I can win this fight. And he manages to scramble back up and out of harm's way and in a better position, which in most cases is the stand-up game for him, because he does have an edge, especially over most of these guys on the show here. But the problem with Gutierrez is he definitely slows down as the fight goes, but he has heart to go three rounds. So I'm expecting him to go a little bit easier, or to go three rounds a little bit easier outside of the show now, because again, the Ultimate Fighter puts all sorts of different pressure on you. I've seen people struggle with cardio on the show and then after the show kind of fix that problem a little bit, if that makes sense, and have a little bit better cardio issues. So I'm expecting to see the best Gutierrez we've seen thus far on the show. His first one was very competitive. It was an impressive win because it was basically a complete performance in all aspects of the game. I mean, he had a hard-fought battle and came out on top. So, and then his second win, it was really an impressive display of striking. And Gutierrez was the one actually that won that fight by TKO stoppage as well. So he's been impressive. I mean, a guy that, again, brings it on the feet, a lot of power, a lot of effective striking, and he's hard to control on the ground. So for Barzola, that's not a good combination, because Barzola is one of these other guys, another guy that likes to basically grapple. I mean, he has more experience than Gutierrez, especially, I mean, looking at their background before the Ultimate Fighter show, he's been fighting against better competition throughout his career. He's had more fights, so he has that experience going for him, and he's not a bad fighter. I mean, he's the type of guy, again, he was actually getting dominated in his second fight, and he came back and won with a lot of heart. I mean, he looked like he was about to go, and he came back and ended up actually finishing the fight by TKO stoppage as well, with that body punch that I was mentioning earlier. And his first one was actually a hard-fought battle as well. He showed a lot of heart. So that's the type of fighter Barzola is. He's one of these guys that on the feet, he's not bad. I mean, he's not going to overwhelm you. He basically would like to utilize a striking game, again, to bring the fight to the floor and kind of grind out his opponents a little bit. But he is a little bit shorter. He's not going to have the size in this fight. So he's one of your short, stocky, grappling base fighters, basically. And Gutierrez is one of these longer, more effective strikers. So it's going to come down to, will Barzola be able to get the fight to the ground and keep Gutierrez on the floor? I don't think he will be. I think Gutierrez is going to be able to sprawl and brawl well enough. Even if Barzola gets him down, I don't think Barzola is going to be able to hold him down. So on the feet, there is a big edge to Gutierrez, especially with the confidence that this guy has right now. I mean, he saw Barzola basically having problems with good strikers on the show, and Gutierrez is the best striker that Barzola's faced thus far. Striker versus grappler in this matchup, I'm actually going to side with the striker. I think Gutierrez is just going to be a little bit too much for Barzola. He's going to have the size. He's going to have the ability to finish this fight and outpoint Barzola along the way. So my official pick is Gutierrez to win.
Barzola is pretty well-rounded, and Gutierrez is more of a striker, but I'm still favoring Gutierrez, and here's why. Barzola on the show, he showcased, you know, some diverse striking attacks. He has some good straight left kicks, a good straight left hand, and some good kicks. He mixes up his targets well, not just to the head, to the body. And the big issue with him, though, is his striking defense is not very good. And even though he does utilize takedowns, he doesn't do much with them. So I would expect that even if he takes Gutierrez down, if Gutierrez doesn't get up quickly, I can see them getting stood up. Now, looking at Gutierrez, he is very solid footwork overall, stalks his opponents really well. He pushes a high pace, but he can be pressured by grapplers. In his first fight on the show, he actually, you know, got pushed into the fence quite a bit, and that was an issue for him. That guy was pursuing the takedown a lot, and that did take him out of his game a little bit. The other issue with Gutierrez is he doesn't use head movement very well, and his striking defense isn't the greatest, but I don't know how much stock we got to put into that because he actually did suffer an ankle injury before his appearance on the show. So maybe he wasn't able to move as well as he would have liked. And that being said, once his ankle seemed to heal a little bit, he threw a lot more kicks in the second fight and looked really, really good in picking up that victory. So I think that, you know, he's a guy that definitely is a really solid overall boxer. And I will say, even though his experience in professional fights is much less than Barzola, I think that he's going to have some big physical advantages here. And even though Barzola trains at ATT, Gutierrez trains in Chicago too. He trains in the United States. So I expect him to be well prepared. And I think this is going to be an interesting battle. And it'll come down to whether or not Barzola can get the takedowns, because I think Gutierrez should be able to outmuscle him. Gutierrez is going to have a pretty big size, height, and reach advantage over Barzola. And honestly, I can see eventually Barzola not just fighting at featherweight, but fighting at bantamweight. And this is the lightweight tournament final. Honestly, on the show, in a Barzola's quarterfinal matchup, he ended up facing a guy in a Jonathan Ortega that has a similar style to Gutierrez, except Ortega was a little bit smaller and slower, and Ortega was landing at will on Barzola. And that fight ended up actually having to go to the third round because the judges couldn't make up their mind after the first two. So I think Barzola's going to have his hands full here, and I think Gutierrez, with his power, with his striking accuracy and his technique, I think that he outlands Barzola and could either put him away or at least win the first two rounds and take a decision. So my pick is going to be Gutierrez. Now moving on to the other Ultimate Fighter Latin America finale, we have Eric Montano in the welterweight division, who is 6-3, taking on Enrique Marin, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Marin -210, the comeback on Montano +160. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, line hasn't really moved that much. It's currently Marin -185. The comeback on Montano is +160. So line margins again tighten up a little bit. Not a lot of early action coming into this fight. This should be another good fight, honestly. I mean, obviously these are tough Latin America two welterweight finalists, and both deservingly so. They made it to, you know, to the championship, and it should be a very competitive, close, interesting type of fight. Getting into it right away though, Marin, I'll start off with him since he is favored again. He's got a variety of attacks on the feet. I mean, he uses boxing well, his elbows, his kicks. He's a little bit better than I expected, to be honest with you. He works well behind his jab. He has a nice clinch game to go along with it. And then he's even capable of putting a fight on the ground. And on the ground, he does have good top control. He's got decent reversals from the bottom as well. So if he does get put on his back, he's able to, a lot of times, to get out of a bad position, reverse things, get on top where he could do a little bit more damage and work well. So his takedown D overall could be a little bit better. His strike D overall could be a little bit better, but I do see enough in his technical overall game that I like it. I mean, it is, again, the way his striking is and the way he goes about it, and he utilizes everything in his arsenal to score and be effective, is really impressive. So on the show also, he showed some toughness in his first fight. I mean, he got overwhelmed early, but he kept calm and started taking over midway through the first round and won that fight. It was a pretty close competitive fight by majority decision, but it was one of those fights that you could see, and you were probably pretty pleased with seeing him stay in the ball game and stay focused and be able to turn things around and do well. He dominated his second opponent on the feet, finished him by a rear naked choke. So this guy has a complete skill set. I think this guy could do really well in the UFC. He might be eventually dropping down out of 170 to 155, or even if he stays at 170. If he's matched right and keeps on improving, Marin is not going to be an easy out for sure. Now, going over to Montano, of course, he is one of these guys that his brother, of course, is already in the UFC. So there's been a little bit of buzz hype around Montano, even though his brother has had some questionable performances. And a lot of times, a lot of people would basically think, okay, this is this guy's brother, so he must be around the same type of fighter. That's true in some ways, but I actually think that this Montano is a little bit better and has more upside. I mean, he is very strong physical fighter. He uses kicks while at range. He likes to clinch up, look for takedowns and slams. In fact, his first fight on the show, he actually won that fight because he slammed his opponent to the ground and broke his opponent's arm. It was a pretty nasty break too. It looked like he was having a little bit of problems early on in that fight as well. So he did what he had to do. He got the win. But in his second fight, I mean, he really showed up. He showed a solid stand-up game and his ability to finish on the ground. And what Montano is definitely – he is a finisher. I mean, he's the type of guy that can knock you out on the feet. He's the type of guy that on the ground. I mean, what was impressive in his second fight was his ability when he found the opening. I mean, he wrapped up that rear naked choke and ended the fight quick. So that's what I'm saying, talking about when I'm talking about Montano being a finisher. And that's why I think he does have better upside or more upside than his brother, honestly. And this fight against Marin, even though I think Marin's a little bit more of the technical striker, Montano actually has a little bit more power. So Marin has to be careful. Because Montano's the type of guy, again, he uses elbows, knees, it throws big punches along the way. He's very strong. So he has a lot going for him here, and I'm expecting a very competitive fight. But all that being said, I still think Marin is the better fighter. I think Marin will make a little bit less mistakes. Montano kind of goes for things a little bit more, and it leaves himself opening, even on the ground. I mean, he was reversed, spent a lot of time on his back, even in that second fight that he won. So I think Marin is going to be a little bit more capable of not making as many mistakes, and I think he's just a step above. He's just a little bit cleaner with this technique, and he's just a little bit more of the skilled fighter here. So skill should trump power in this case. So that's why I kind of have to lean a little bit more towards Marin, but I do think that this should be a pretty entertaining fight. But my official pick is Marin to win this fight.
Eric Montano, being the brother of Augusto Montano, if it runs in the family, I don't think he'll end up being that great in the UFC, to be completely honest. But, you know, he showed that he was pretty good on the Ultimate Fighter Latin America, at least. He showcased a decent clinch on the show. He had a good power, especially with the left hook. He had an opportunistic ground game. It wasn't a great ground game. He found himself on his back at times, but if his opponent left an opening, he took advantage of it. And he actually did pursue the takedowns as well. He actually finished a fight by scoring a takedown, and his opponent broke their arm on the trying to prop themselves up on the way down. So, you know, that's something that, you know, he is potentially capable of doing here, especially because Marin, if you look at him, he had a little bit of an issue with takedown defense on the show. That being said, that issue was mainly because he was facing the number one pick overall in his first fight, and, you know, he got swarmed a little bit early, but he weathered it and then just completely dominated. And he's a guy that looked really, really good. I mean, he surprised a lot of people on the show by his performance. He's actually from Spain, and watching him fight in close range, like especially a phone booth level, you know, where you're just right in the pocket, I think this guy was the best striker on the entire show. Very good short strikes, good elbows, and then on top of that, he backed it up by having spectacular ground game. So even when he did get taken down on the show, which did happen a few times, he was able to either get back up, or for the most part, he was actually able to work for sweeps and roll over from bottom position with Kimura sweeps or you name it. So I think this guy is spectacular on the ground. And then when he was on top position after getting there, you know, he was very dangerous both with strikes on the ground and with threatening submissions. So this is a guy you absolutely should keep an eye on. I think he might be the most talented fighter from the entire season. So I think that he has potentially the brightest future. And Marin, I think what's going to happen here is Montano will be dangerous. He will threaten with some good, powerful shots from distance. But if Marin can get inside on him, I think he's going to start connecting with some big, nasty strikes, especially in combination. And then if it goes to the ground, I wouldn't be surprised if Montano wasn't the one pursuing the takedown. But at some point, I see Marin reversing the position and then working over Montano as well, because I do think he has the better ground game, and I think he's got the better short striking game. So unless Montano can keep him on the outside, or unless Montano can get in top position and stay there, then I see Marin winning this fight relatively handily. I just think he's by far the better overall, more technical fighter. So Enrique Marin is my pick. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Jacir Formiga, who is 18-3, taking on Henry Cejudo, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Cejudo -300, the comeback on Formiga +220. Looking over the line, no love for Formiga right now. Cejudo is minus 500. The comeback on Formiga is plus 400. Not really that surprised by the line movements. I mean, Cejudo's a very popular fighter. Of course, we all know his Olympic gold medal status. I mean, the guy is definitely a world class on the ground. No doubt about that with his wrestling, but it hasn't really translated as well as I'd like to see in the cage thus far. And obviously in his last fight, he had a better or bigger challenge than most people thought against Camus, but that's not really that shocking to me either, because Camus is kind of under the radar. He's a tough guy to beat. I mean, he's a tough guy. Obviously his takedown defense, everything is improving about Camus's game. So that was a pretty solid win for Cejudo regardless, probably better than most people think. So Cejudo's been doing a lot of good things, but basically a lot of people expect him to dominate most fights because of his wrestling. He hasn't really been doing that as much. I mean, in my opinion, his boxing is improving and his stand-up game is really at a level more than I expected at this point. So Cejudo is definitely putting in the right kind of training. He's really improving his overall aspects of MMA, which he needs to be able to compete at the highest level in the sport. And that includes a fight here with Formiga. We all know what Formiga is made of. Formiga is one of the best grapplers in the weight class at 125. If he gets your back, it's very tough to get that guy off you, to shake him off you and not get finished either. I mean, he has a tremendous rear naked choke. He's just a great grappler from top to bottom. I mean, everything about his grappling game is good. And Formiga is another one of these guys that's actually improving. He's getting a little bit more confidence on the feet. He's getting a little bit more power on the feet, as his career progresses. So he deserves to be in this kind of title contender spot, I think, right now because of his improvement level. So this isn't going to be an easy fight for Cejudo, because even though I think Cejudo could do enough, obviously, I don't think Formiga is going to be able to take Cejudo down and control him on the ground. I think what we're going to see here is Cejudo sprawl and brawl and basically outpoint Formiga, even possibly knock him out, because Formiga has had some flaws in the past. His chin is a little bit suspect. And Cejudo does have a little bit more power than I think most expect. And if it does stay standing, Cejudo is going to pick Formiga apart and he could finish him late. But he's got to be cautious, because Formiga is getting a little bit, like I said, more confidence and a little bit more power in his striking as well. So, but honestly, it should be Cejudo's fight to win or lose. He should be able to outpoint Formiga. And if he keeps him off his back, he should kind of cruise in this fight overall. So it should be the side I am going to lean with Cejudo. Just be careful out there as far as line goes, because a minus 500 in this spot against a capable grappler like Formiga, I mean, all it takes is one mistake and Formiga can win this fight. So I am picking Cejudo. He should win more times than not. And I hope at least it's a competitive, somewhat competitive fight, but it really should be a clear, unanimous decision type of fight for Cejudo.
This fight is being billed as a number one contenders type of matchup, and I'm sure that the UFC wants Henry Cejudo to get that shot. Right now he's 9-0, and Formiga, yeah, he's on a nice winning streak as well, but his big issue, of course, is the fact that he lost to three guys that Demetrius Johnson has already beat convincingly. With Cejudo, I mean, this is a guy who won an Olympic gold medal in wrestling, and he is just a tremendous athlete. Cejudo's biggest enemy so far has kind of been himself. It's been that ability to really make the 125-pound weight limit. It's not easy for him. Even though he's not a huge guy, he's actually going to be giving up an inch to Formiga in height, 3 inches in reach. And for some reason, Cejudo just has a nightmare making that 125-pound weight class. It's just been a really rough weight cut for him. So I think what's going to happen here is, as if Cejudo is drained by the weight cut, if you know he's not able to go 100%, then I think Formiga has a shot. But if Cejudo is coming out here 100%, if he has a good weight cut, then it's his fight to lose. This guy is such a tremendous athlete. He was a Golden Gloves boxer, just an excellent boxer, and it's transitioned pretty well into his stand-up in MMA. He's actually won most of his fights, especially recently, with the stand-up. He hasn't been picking up a lot of knockouts on the feet or anything, but he's outworking guys on the feet, not just with boxing, but he mixes in kicks as well. He throws everything pretty hard, and I think Formiga, if he decides to stand and bang with Cejudo, I think he could get himself in some serious trouble. Even though Formiga has shown improvement on the feet, you know, he trains out of Nova União in Brazil, so he's working with some great guys. He's just not quite on that level. Yeah, Formiga dropped Wilson Hayes, but Wilson Hayes doesn't have a very good chin. And Henry Cejudo ate some pretty big shots from Chico Camus in his last fight and was perfectly fine. So I don't think Formiga can do anything to Cejudo on the feet. Where Formiga can threaten him the most is definitely on the ground. Even though Cejudo is an Olympic-level wrestler on the canvas, Formiga is an elite, elite ground fighter. So if Formiga can somehow get this fight to the ground, or if Cejudo, you know, shoots in for a takedown just out of instinct, Formiga does have that ability to latch onto your back and then start threatening with chokes. So that is something that Cejudo will have to be careful for. I think if he really wants to win this fight convincingly, what he needs to do is just keep his distance and then just start working over Formiga with strikes and then just keep using the footwork and circling around. So we'll see what happens. But I think overall, this is definitely a fight that is a good matchup for Henry Cejudo. And I think Formiga, while he does have a couple paths to victory, I think that they're few and far between. And I expect Cejudo to probably win by decision and potentially win by knockout if he's able to connect solidly like Joseph Benavidez and John Dodson were able to. So my pick is Henry Cejudo. Now moving up to the featherweight division, we have Ricardo Lamas, who is 15-4, taking on Diego Sanchez, who is 27-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Lamas minus 600, the comeback on Sanchez plus 400. Right now, looking over five times, it's Lamas minus 600, the comeback on Sanchez plus 450. So 50 cents better on Sanchez. Two-way action coming in, but a little bit more so with the parlay action on Lamas. That's why it's keeping the line a little high. I do think the line is a little high, that being said. I mean, skill set for skill set, this is what you're getting in this fight. First of all, Sanchez is dropping down to 145 for the first time. So that's an interesting aspect of this game. The other factor for Sanchez is he's been out since June of 2014 as well. So he's been out quite some time. But of course, we all know Sanchez is a gym rat. I mean, he's going to be prepared. He's going to try to do things the right way. So I'm expecting the professionalism in Sanchez as far as his camp, everything goes. He should be making 145, but the weigh-ins are definitely going to be key in this fight here, I think, to see how well Sanchez does make the drop and how he looks. But overall, Lamas is the better fighter. I mean, Lamas is definitely more technical on the skill. He's got a little bit more pure knockout power. He obviously has the wrestling game and a submission game to go along with it. He has everything. Lamas is a complete fighter. He's going to have the speed advantage over Sanchez. So there's a lot of things to like about this fight for Lamas. But at the same time, Sanchez, as we all know, those people that obviously bet Pearson against Sanchez are still bitter and still have a right to be, because that was a ridiculous decision out there. So Sanchez, for some reason, somehow, the way he goes about fighting, I mean, that fight, honestly, there's no excuse for it at all. I mean, that decision should not have went his way. But other times, I mean, if you look back through Sanchez's career, I'm going to use the Martin Campman fight for an example. That's another fight he shouldn't have won, but he pushed a high enough pace and he took a beating early on and he pushed a high enough pace that he made a few of those judges kind of sway towards him. I mean, because he's got that warrior spirit in him and he does bring a fight. I mean, he's capable of getting the fight to the ground in occasions, depending on the matchup, and he's capable of pushing forward and pushing a high pace, even though he's not the most technical striker. He's got a little bit of power on the feet, but he's not going to overwhelm you with his punching power either. He's just relentless in his attack. So he's got a lot of quality wins throughout his career, but it's just the pace that Sanchez pushes that makes it, I think, kind of likable or a little bit better for the judges. So that's what you got to always worry about with Sanchez. Obviously, he's proven it in the past more than one time. So even though Lamas is the better fighter here, I would still be concerned, even at that price on the scorecards, because this fight obviously is in Mexico. Again, you can say what you want, but Sanchez is the more popular of the two for sure. He's going to have some advantages in this fight. Obviously, he is dropping down to 145. He's going to be the bigger fighter. He is a softball going into this. And then again, that pace he pushes. Lamas, even though he has more technical skill, he's got several advantages in this fight. He should be the rightful favorite in this spot as well. But Lamas does also have some concerns, and one of them is his chin. Now, again, Sanchez doesn't have crazy amount of knockout power, but Lamas' chin is definitely a concern in most cases. I mean, that's one reason that kind of keeps me away from betting Lamas at times. It's because I just don't trust it. I mean, he's been knocked out three times in his career, and I just think that he's been wobbled and staggered beyond that as well. But then, I mean, he has those situations where he's performed relatively well, even against Jose Aldo, of all people. I mean, he managed to go five rounds with Aldo and not get knocked out. So it's a bit of a head-scratcher for me, no doubt about it. But still, that is a concern. So for me, it's Lamas' fight to win or lose. He should be able to technically outpoint Sanchez. He should be a little bit better everywhere, honestly. But the relentless pace of Sanchez makes me a little bit concerned. And then, of course, that chin factor for Lamas as well. So I am picking Lamas. He is the rightful favorite. He is the better fighter. We know what he's capable of, 145. I mean, he's a top-tier title contender type of guy, no doubt about that. And Sanchez, we just don't know what we're going to get from him, especially with the time off and everything. So all signs are definitely pointing toward Lamas winning this fight. at the price, be cautious out there though, because I think it's a little bit high and we'll probably see this line drop at, maybe on fight day or right before post or something. I guarantee you we see some action coming in on Sanchez at that price. So if you're looking to bet Lamas, I would wait and see if the line drops a little bit because I am expecting it to.
On paper, this fight is pretty one-sided. I mean, Ricardo Lamas is at the height of the UFC featherweight division. He's beat pretty much the who's who of all the best guys in the division other than the very tip-top. He lost to Chad Mendes. He lost to Jose Aldo. He beat everybody else that was good. Diego Sanchez, on the other hand, he definitely is in a decline. I mean, at one point he was explosive. He was real dangerous. He was a title contender at lightweight. But that was a long, long time ago. And even then, when he was a title contender, he still lost. So I think right now, Diego Sanchez, this is a guy that is just on his last legs. I mean, he is the last guy that's still being competitive right now that was from the Ultimate Fighter Season 1. I mean, just about everybody else is either retired or I guess you got Stefan Bonner still screwing around in Bellator a little bit. But for the most part, I mean, those guys are done. And I think this is going to be a tough matchup for him. Technically, Ricardo Lamas is better everywhere. Lamas has better kicks. He has better pure boxing. He has better wrestling. And he's got better submissions. And he's got better ground and pound. He's better in the clinch. But that being said, Diego Sanchez doesn't care about anybody being technically better than him. For the most part, he just goes out there. He's a blood and guts type of guy where he will just push a high pace. He will fight through your punches, eat shots to try to land them, and he will throw at a high pace, and he will go for all three rounds. And for the most part, even if he loses the first two rounds, he's still going real hard in that third, and he actually wins the third round a lot of times, even in fights that he ends up losing. And that actually sometimes helps him end up stealing some decisions. So, this is a guy that just bites down on his mouthpiece and goes for it. So even he makes up for his technical deficiencies by just being super scrappy. Like, he is the ultimate when you think of scrappy. You think of Diego Sanchez because he doesn't have a lot of punching power. He's not very technical in terms of his striking ability. He's not a big submission threat on the ground, but he just keeps going and going and going like that Energizer Bunny. And he's got a tremendous chin. I mean, this guy can take punishment like no one else. So I think, Lamas is going to have his hands full. He's going to have to continue hurting Diego Sanchez and just putting him in bad positions, or there's going to be that threat that Sanchez could walk away with a decision. Like, it's just something you always have to kind of keep in the back of your mind. The guy has won so many controversial decisions throughout his career. It's not quite to Leonard Garcia levels, but I mean, it's right up there. So, Diego Sanchez just knows how to pick up wins. And it's a lot of it is because of just a high activity rate. So, Lamas, that's been a bit of a criticism of him at times, is the fact that, he isn't the most active. So there is a small possibility here that even though Lamas is literally better everywhere, that Diego Sanchez could pull out a decision. So the biggest question mark, honestly, for Sanchez is the fact that he's been out just as long as Eric Perez, since about June of 2014, since that controversial win over Ross Pearson. So he was dealing with, I believe, a broken collarbone. So that's something that, he's had to overcome. He's going to be coming in here and making his featherweight debut after not fighting for nearly 18 months. And I think that's going to be a little bit too tough to overcome. So I'm siding with Ricardo Lamas, but you just got to exercise caution here. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening in the welterweight division, we have Kelvin Gastelum, who is 12-1, taking on Neil Magny, who is 16-5. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Gastelum -290 to come back on Magny +210. And right now, looking over Five Dimes, it is currently -300 +250. So there has been some back and forth movement on this fight for sure. Lots of two-way opinion, believe it or not, on this fight as well. And it's caused the line to bounce a little bit everywhere. And I'm sure we'll continue to see that happen as we go. Because both these guys, deservingly so, have fans and betting support behind them. And they always seem to have that support, and it's because of what they've been able to accomplish thus far in their careers, especially Magni Man. I'll tell you what, he's stepping in this fight, taking it on short notice as well. But Magni's the type of guy that the short notice won't have a big impact on him because he's always in shape, always training. Obviously, we know how often he's been fighting the last couple of years, and he's went on an incredible win streak. Impressive performance, even in his last fight against even Eric Silva, which is a very dangerous fighter. And then, of course, he suffered that loss to Maya before that. But before that, he went on an incredible streak. So the guy keeps on improving. He has length over most people in the division. And he knows how to use that reach. He knows how to use his footwork. He's fun to watch strike on the feet. His wrestling is getting to the point where he usually out-wrestles his opponents. If he does get taken down, he's hard to keep down. He maneuvers well. His sub-defense, even against Damian Maya, I'm saying this, and he got finished by Maya, but you could tell that his sub-defense even improved because maybe a couple years ago, Magni would have been subbed a lot faster in that spot. And Maya is definitely a tricky guy to be able to, keep off you for that long. So credit to him, even despite the loss. And I think his improvement is definitely showing. But this is another tough spot for him because it just like I'm talking about Magni, Gaslam has been improving. He has more fights right now in the UFC. Obviously, he won the Ultimate Fighter in a bit of an upset back then against Uriah Hall. Now it makes a lot more sense if you think about everything that they've accomplished since then. But Gaslam is one of these typical powerful wrestlers, no doubt about that. That's what his strength is. So on the feet, even though Magni might have a little bit more technical skill, Gaslam is more than capable of finishing fights. He's got a ton of knockout power on the feet. Obviously, he can ragdoll people, get to the ground when he needs to. Again, even though Magni's pretty smooth on the ground, I think Gaslam is actually more of the submission threat here as well. So you're looking at a complete fighter that's getting better. The problems that Gaslam has had is obviously his cardio at times can be a little bit questionable and sketchy, so it's hard to trust him there. And obviously that weight cut, dropping down to 170 has not been that successful for him. In fact, that's why he took his last fight at 185. He did manage to win that fight as well. Now he's dropping back down to 170. And he is a beast at 170. You're talking about a guy that can contend and definitely make it tough for any champion, including Robbie Lawler right now. Gaslam is definitely a tough out. The way he stylistically goes about things with the power on the feet, with his wrestling, with his ability to finish on the floor. So I think what you're going to see here is Gaslam being able to control Magni, get him down when he wants to get him down. I think on the feet, he's going to be a little bit more dangerous as well because he has a little bit more power. I guess my main concern in this fight would seriously be as the fight goes on, if Magni can survive it, then Magni might start taking over in the later rounds here. It is a 5-round fight despite the short notice. And I think that, rounds 4 and 5, definitely you have to think that they favor Magni if it does go despite the short notice. But overall, I still think Gaslam could even win if it hits the scorecards. And I think there is a good chance that Gaslam finishes Magni. With that power that I'm talking about, and if he does get him to the floor, take his back or, through a choke or whatnot, even though Magni's defense has gotten better, you combine technique with power like Gaslam has, and it's hard to really, maintain and survive against a fighter like that, even on the ground. So overall, I think stylistically, Gaslam is a better fighter and it should show, and he should win this fight more times than not, even with a very game Neil Magni as an opponent. So my official pick is going to be Gaslam. I think he does win this fight, possibly by stoppage, but even if not, I think he can steal at least 3 out of 5 rounds and win under the cards as well.
This is a very, very interesting battle, especially with Neil Magni stepping in for Matt Brown, because what Neil Magni has going for him is the fact that he has tremendous cardio and a great reach, and he's going to need every last bit of that if he wants to win this fight, because Kelvin Gastelum is a workhorse. Gastelum does a really good job of pushing the pace early and then using that wrestling base to get fights to the ground and then just start beating up his opponents. And I do think that Gastelum can do that, especially early in this fight. The big question mark, of course, is the fact that this is a 5-round fight. And Neil Magni, he loses a lot of fights in the early parts and then just weathers it and then comes back and just starts smashing his opponent. And I think that that is something that you have to be a little bit concerned about here, because Gastelum, this is his first 5-round fight. I know it's the first 5-round fight for Magni too, but the fact that Magni has never had conditioning issues, I'm not worried about him whatsoever. But with Gastelum dropping back down to the welterweight division, where he has had historically a tremendous amount of trouble making the 170-pound weight limit, and the fact that he has not always been the most conditioned fighter, it's a little scary. So that being said, I do see Kelvin Gastelum getting takedowns early and often. Neil Magni is a decent wrestler, and when he's in top position is good, but he does give up takedowns to solid grapplers. And you saw that with guys like Sergio Moraes and Damian Maia. And I definitely think Kelvin Gastelum can join that club. I don't know if Kelvin Gastelum can get the finish. Magny does not have a great chin. He doesn't have the best submission defense. So there will definitely be the threat of a finish here from Gastelum. And to top all that off, I do think that Magny could get tired out if he's stuck on his back for extended periods of time. You know, those long limbs are at a big disadvantage when you're on your back. So we'll see what happens here. But the other thing to keep an eye on is if Gastelum has a tough weight cut, then Neil Magny could absolutely take this fight over as it gets into the later rounds. Even though Magny's stepping up on relatively short notice, you know, about a month to format Brown, this is still a 5-round fight. So even though Magny has now fought, this is his third fight in about, you know, a little over 2 months, I still expect him to come in here and be the fresher guy. So Gastelum is going to have his hands full. And I honestly, the best chance for Gastelum to win this fight is to probably pick up a finish in the first round or two. Because I do expect Neil Magny could come on strong late. But that being said, I do think that Gastelum's wrestling and pressure should be enough. But it is scary. So I really don't know if you should be betting Kelvin Gastelum. But I am going to pick him just because, you know, he is, at least, in my opinion, the better overall fighter than Neil Magny, but the conditioning is something that you have to absolutely keep an eye on. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 78. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a Premium member, just go to MMAoddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's Premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsors, Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.